This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. When it was created in 1872, it had 75 members, and its first president was Cincinnati attorney Alfonso Taft. Since then, the Cincinnati Bar Association has served the Cincinnati community by providing legal education and programs and engaging in a variety of service projects. And the association has grown to include more than 4,500 members. Here to discuss the Cincinnati Bar Association are Executive Director John Norwine and Eric Combs, a partner at Dinsmore & Scholl and current president of the Cincinnati Bar Association. And Eric and John, thank you so much for being here this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Yes.
You can join our conversation, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. John, I understand you're the history expert on this, so how did the Cincinnati Bar Association get its start?
It really was just a gathering of attorneys in town for primarily, at least they thought at the time, social purposes. And they got together in early 1872. Alfonso Taft, as you mentioned, was the first president, and he's the father of William Howard Taft. Dues were $5 or $10, depending upon your age at that time. And we still have the original ledger book that people were entering their names and their whether or not they had paid their dues.
So who were some of the prominent names in that ledger?
Actually, very few names that you would recognize at this today.
We recognize Taft, of course.
We recognize Taft. There were actually, I don't recall all the other names, although I compared notes with Greg Rhodes one time. Greg Rhodes is a Cincinnati Reds historian, and we believe that some of the same people who were involved in founding the Reds were at the Bar Association, or they were at that first meeting of the Bar Association.
And the Reds, but see, 1869 for the Reds, and the Bar Association
1872.
Was 1872. Can't be coincidence, can it?
No, don't think so.
Now, in its early days, how much of a voice did the city have in the legal community and in the national government? It's pretty extensive, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And although it began to accelerate after the first decade or two of the Bar Association's existence, a lot more organization, a lot more structure, and they began working with people like, not that much longer later, Murray Seasongood, and who was a prominent Cincinnatian and a president of the Cincinnati Bar Association in later years. But the Bar Association at that point began to educate attorneys. It began to serve the public in different ways, and it wanted to be more out front than it had been in the past.
Now, what are some of the other organization's other accomplishments since its founding?
We were one of the first what we call lawyer referral services in the country in 1943. People were calling the president of the Bar Association saying, I need an attorney. How can I find one? And the association decided to set up a referral service in order to give people the names of attorneys who could do the work that they were seeking.
Now, during the Civil Rights era, did the CBA have a big role in that?
Cincinnati Bar Association had a big role in the late 60s when there were riots in Cincinnati and there were mass arrests. The Bar Association, probably 30 or 40 of its members, volunteered to represent clients in court who had been arrested during the rioting. And at that point, there was not enough of a legal aid or public defender presence to take care of all of that.
Eric, when did you first realize that you wanted to be an attorney?
Oh, gee. I watched too much L.A. Law as a kid. that looked like fun. My father actually had always wanted to go to law school. He ended up being a small-town banker out in Adams County, but he couldn't afford it. And he always admired the profession and thought it was an admirable profession to take on, and it was a way to give back and serve people. And so he was really my primary motivator, but I knew pretty early on that I wanted to become a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. John, what about you? When did you first realize that I'm going to be an attorney?
Right at the end of eighth grade, when you had to sign
that
up
soon.
For classes your freshman year, I decided that I would take Latin because I had heard that attorneys needed to learn Latin. And after 1 year of Latin, I decided they needed to learn French. So I made a switch right then.
But eighth grade, that you were aware of that early.
No attorneys in the family. In fact, I don't think I'd ever met an attorney, but it just sounded good to me.
Yeah, is part of the mission of the Cincinnati Bar Association to get young people engaged and get them thinking about becoming attorneys, going into the legal profession in some way, shape, or form?
Absolutely. I mean, part of what what we see is an opportunity, particularly through our Cincinnati Bar Foundation, which gives out about $100,000 in grants every year, try to educate the public and particularly young people to the extent we can about what the legal system is, how important it is, the role it plays in the community. One of my favorite programs that we do, and really the first, my first foray into Bar Association involvement, was our high school mock trial program. High school kids participate. They actually serve as lawyers and as witnesses in a sort of a canned problem, and they act as lawyers. And I tell you, if you saw these kids up there on their feet advocating like lawyers, you'd hire them in a second if you had a problem. They're really good, and it really I was mentioning to somebody earlier today, I've actually seen a couple of my former students that I used to coach now become lawyers in town. And that's pretty gratifying. And it really whets their appetite for a legal career.
So this mock trial, it gets their attention. And that's amazing.
Actually, here in Hamilton County, we have the biggest district competition. They compete in various places throughout the state and then go on to state competition. We've had teams actually progress onto national competition from here in the area. We have a very competitive area for mock trial, and a lot of the schools that you've heard of and do well in other things also do very well in mock trial and enjoy it a great deal.
It's kind of like being involved in a debating competition, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like that in terms of the amount of work they put in. They get help. There are lawyers who volunteer to coach these teams. They are judged by volunteer lawyers who volunteer to serve as judges on panels at the courthouse on a Friday in February, and it's one of the best things we do, in my opinion.
You were talking earlier about how you watch too much L.A. Law as a kid.
Right.
Do you find the kids have a bit of a skewed view of what an attorney does from TV and movies, and once they get involved in something like the mock trial, they find out, boy, this is a lot of research and writing, and it's not just standing up in front of a jury and making your case?
I think that's probably right. I think that even for lawyers of more vintage or more experience like myself, it's still the most fun to go into trial and advocate and be in court. But certainly, I think as young people who either headed to law school or who had the mock trial experience, to understand the amount of work that goes on in preparation for that is eye-opening.
Now, you also mentioned the foundation that the Bar Association has. Tell me about that. That's a charitable organization that the bar is running here.
It's effectively the charitable arm of the Cincinnati mm-hmm. Bar Association. Its director is Renee McFedrin. It's got a separate board, but it shares space and certain services with the Bar Association. And it has its own meetings and accepts grant proposals primarily related to, as I said, educating the public and particularly children about the role of law, and also supporting lawyers and sort of anything legally related that can make a case for why it ought to receive grants. So things like the Volunteer Lawyers for the Poor Foundation receives a grant from us regularly. Lots of different activities that we fund, but most related to increasing education about the law and helping people understand how to get access to legal services.
John, when did the charitable part of the Bar Association get its start?
It started in 1961. Several attorneys in town felt that we should have a charitable arm. They got together, they incorporated, and there had been some funds left over from an estate from the 1920s that had been just sitting in Bar Association accounts, and they were intended for charitable purposes, but they really had not utilized them. They used that to start the foundation, and it grew from there. The foundation actually got a gift in the mid-1980s of about $450,000 from one attorney who had no children, and he and his wife just enjoyed the Bar Association activities.
Now, during the recession, Erica, the legal profession had a bit of a slump that it encountered as well. How is it doing these days?
I think things are looking up. I think it had a fundamental impact on the way, particularly large law firms, but then kind of trickling down from there, employed attorneys. There's been an impact on law school applications and law school enrollment as a result of the recession and its impact on legal employment. But I think that the worst is past us, that job demand has started to creep back up. I think firms are hiring again. I think there's employment. I understand that enrollment at our local law schools, we have two of them, of course, very good ones, is back up and headed in the right direction. And so I think things are improving steadily, slowly, sort of like the economy in general, improving, but not rapidly, but steadily and surely.
What kind of advice do you give a young person who's thinking about entering the legal profession? Don't take Latin, take French.
That's the best advice of all.
I would say that think carefully about the law school decision. It is a huge investment. It's not as it was pre-2008 or even sooner than that, really. It stopped before 2008 being a sure ticket. It used to be you came out of law school and you knew there'd be a job for you somewhere. That's simply not true for 100% of students anymore. So you need to think carefully about a very large investment of time and money before going. But if it's something you feel good about doing, then I encourage students to do it. I think it's a great profession. I enjoy it. I enjoy lawyers, and I encourage people to do it.
John, do you think that young people should look at being generalists, or should they study something specific if they're thinking about the legal profession? Should they concentrate on one area or be broad?
You're going to have a broad education in law school, but very few people can be generalists anymore. You've got to look at particular areas, and the large firms have figured that out. They've solved it. They have people in all areas. As a smaller firm, it's tougher, but you can't do everything, and you pretty much need to realize that, or you get yourself and your clients in trouble.
Now, is there a certain undergraduate degree that makes the most sense, Eric?
Used to be. I majored in political science because I was told that's kind of what you did if you wanted to go to law school. You major in political science or English or history. But these days, I think most admissions folks at law schools would tell you there is no special undergrad major. In fact, many schools look to diversify amongst their student body. So I went to law school with a nurse, a PhD in chemistry, folks who had all different kinds of varied backgrounds. And I would say that that these days there is no one thing, only anything that would make you analytical in terms of trying to read and write would be helpful, but no one particular major.
And what about the presence of the internet these days? How's that affecting the legal profession?
It's made a big impact. It is now easier to do your research, and it is cheaper to do your research. We're getting cheaper to do your research. Plus, you don't need to leave the office to get continuing education. You don't need to get out and do a lot of things that actually we encourage young lawyers to do. If you can sit there at your desk and get your education in and everything else, then you kind of isolate yourself, and I think that's a danger.
Eric, with the internet, are we seeing more and more people, though, trying to be their own attorney?
Well, you do see some of that, and I think there's pitfalls with that, and we try to identify those for people. Certainly, there are certain information is good, but information without the right guidance of an experienced attorney can be dangerous. And of course, there's all sorts of sources now for information, bad and good. And so we try to keep an eye on that and try to help people identify what's good information and what's bad to the extent we can.
Our issue at the Bar Association is that we have people call and they've done their own research and they've analyzed their problem, and sometimes they analyze it completely incorrectly. So they want to be referred to an attorney. They tell us what type of attorney they need, and we have to tell them, no, that's not who you need. You need somebody else.
Now, have the law schools kept up very well with the area of digital law and then using the internet?
I think so. I don't know as much about Chase. I'm on the adjunct faculty up at UC, and I know that they've got a professor that teaches an e-discovery class, what they call e-discovery, which is the discovery process and litigation that goes toward discovering electronic mail and technological communication and things like that. Both of our local law schools are very good about innovation and keeping an eye on things like that. So I think they are on top of that. I think the other challenge that John didn't specifically discuss that technology presents is for any association that are started as a social organization. People socialize online now. Used to be that if you wanted to get together with a bunch of lawyers, you had to come to the Bar Association. Well, now you can do that on a Facebook page or online or some chat room or something like that. And so it's important for us to identify ways that we are special in the way we can provide attorneys opportunities to get together and gather and fellowship. And so we're consistently focused on that as well.
There's a lot of negativity about the legal profession. I wonder how does an organization like the Cincinnati Bar Association counter these perceptions?
We've tried over the years various type of PR programs. We've tried we do our press releases. We try to get facts to attorneys and to the public about what we do, who we are, and what attorneys do. But it is still difficult when you have an adversarial proceeding And the attorney on one side sometimes isn't kind to the parties on the other side. It's very difficult. It's a very difficult matter to tell the public we're doing our job and this is the best way we do our job.
Yeah, is it true, Eric, that no one likes an attorney till they need one?
I don't know about that.
No offense intended.
Oh, no, none taken. I think that a lot of people are wary of lawyers because they see them as advocates and fighters, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. So until they need one, as you say, they're wary of them. I think as a bar association, one of our roles is to try to focus on the positive that our lawyers do, not necessarily inside the courtroom, because as John says, that's hard, but we have so many lawyers doing so many great things around town, whether it's at the GCF, who I just saw leave, or on boards or in community service, doing pro bono work for organizations, serving on boards all over town, picking up a hammer and hammering on a house. We have so many lawyers doing so many great things around town. I think it's part of our role to try to highlight that and bring that to the fore to try to do what we can to improve the image of lawyers as a group.
Yeah, well, what areas of law, if any, do you see a real need for in Cincinnati?
Domestic relations is a big area of need. The local legal aid society gets thousands or maybe tens of thousands of calls a year from people they cannot help. It's very difficult to represent all the people in domestic relations court that actually need assistance. So if there were more domestic relations attorneys who could give pro bono service to the public, it would be very helpful to us.
Erica, same thing, domestic relations. Are there any other areas that you see?
You talk about need. I think there's two separate things. Legal aid is able to take about 20% of the calls that come in and help those people. So you've got a huge underservice to a segment of our population that's too poor to pay for legal services. So you have things like domestic relations, bankruptcy representation, evictions, landlord-tenant. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have businesses, very successful large companies in town who require legal services. And some of those growing areas are intellectual property. So patent, trademark, copyright, that's growing, digital security, white collar sort of issues with government investigation. So all those areas are areas that are growing in firms like mine. So that it runs the spectrum.
Yeah, the Chase Law started a program to get new attorneys to practice in rural areas. Is there anything similar going on in Ohio? Any programs in Ohio that are trying to get attorneys to work in more rural places?
I'm not aware of any, although there are in other states, and I believe in Nebraska, North Carolina, or North Dakota, the state government is helping attorneys set up practices in rural areas. They're funding them, or they're taking care of writing off some of their student loans if they do that. And so there is more of a need, without question, in smaller towns than there is in Cincinnati or Cleveland or Columbus.
Now, Eric, you were starting to talk about one of the ways to change the perceptions about attorneys is you know, get out there and do things for the community, which when you look at the list that the Cincinnati Bar Association has, it's amazing. And you've touched on several of them, the Charitable Foundation, the mock trial program, the lawyer referral service. What are some of the other things, the other programs that you're involved in to help the community?
Oh, gosh.
It's so many. We could talk about them for a
sure.
long time.
We just recently had our Run for Kids. It benefits Pro Kids, which is the outfit that helps kids who need advocates in our juvenile and foster care system and other systems. That was downtown and very popular, very well attended, that our young lawyers section puts on. We have lawyers that go to NAS Trinity up here across Washington Park and serve dinners on Sundays in the fall. John, help me out here. What else?
We have once a month we go up to the Hamilton County Law Library at the courthouse, and one of our lawyers puts on an informational program for the public. And it may be bankruptcy one or domestic. It may be a lot of different topics. We try to vary them. And we send people out to speak to various groups on a relatively frequent basis if they need information about the law or a particular area of the law.
Now, how important is that those legal system seminars that you're doing at the Hamilton County Law Library, how important are educational programs like these for the public?
I think they're critical. People sometimes do not know if they have a legal issue or problem. And to be able to come to these without charge, and listen to an expert in that area talk about it, you can either figure that you have an issue and get some advice as to how to take care of it, or you can maybe be reassured that you do not have an issue. So I think it's very important to get out and get into the public and do this as a public service.
Erica, the legal referral system that the Bar Association has, how exactly does that work?
Well, we have a number that you call in. We have a series of people there ready to take a call that has a resource to refer to. We get over 15,000 calls a year. We have over 225 lawyers, maybe 250 lawyers who are able to take referral calls. And we have a system whereby those folks that we have on the phones are great, are able to try to identify whether there is an issue with which an attorney can help them. And if so, what type of attorney they need and which of the attorneys on the list are able to help them. So, the calls come in. We have a team ready to take them and sort of, triage them, so to speak, and identify a lawyer and try to be a matchmaker for that lawyer and that client.
And, do you have a mentoring program as well, if I understand right? A youth mentoring program?
We have had, many years ago, the Young Lawyers section got together with Cincinnati Youth Collaborative and tried to put young lawyers together with people to mentor. The Supreme Court has a specific attorney mentoring program that we've encouraged people to take advantage of. So we've got all sorts of different types of mentoring going on at the Cincinnati Bar Association that we encourage and foster, whether it's attorneys with young people, attorneys with other attorneys. We're all about mentoring.
So what about arbitration? You have an arbitration program at the Bar Association?
We have several arbitration programs.
How do those work?
We have a program that if an attorney gets into a fee dispute with a client, we would try to bring them both in and arbitrate that dispute. We also have another arm that will arbitrate disputes between business owners or individuals as an alternative to going to court. So you know, we've done arbitrations for many years and find that it's less contentious often than going to court, and it's cheaper and it's easier for the client.
What exactly is arbitration, John?
Arbitration is just – it's a matter where the parties come in. It's less formal. And an arbitrator, instead of a judge, decides who's right, who's wrong, or who gets the check, or kind of makes a judgment on the merits of the case.
Is it usually binding or?
Typically, by agreement. So many commercial contracts will have arbitration clauses in them. The other thing about arbitration that John mentioned is less formal. It's not all the rules of evidence often do not apply to the same degree as they do in court. So you might have somebody testify to hearsay. You might have documents that somebody says, oh, I'm not sure that meets these six requirements for getting into court, but might be submitted in arbitration. So many people like it because it's easier to understand and not as lawyered up, so to speak, as a visit to the courtroom.
So Cincinnati Bar Association has been around for over 100 years now. What do you think the future holds for the organization, Eric?
I think it's an exciting time to be at the Bar Association. I think we've got lots of opportunity. We've got a lot of history behind us. We've got a great staff led by John who's in tune with what our lawyers want. But we also have exciting opportunities to improve what we do and bringing lawyers together and providing information to lawyers that's helpful to them, that's relevant to them. And I hope we continue to do that. I think we're going to find new ways through technology to do that, through social media to do that. And we're excited about it.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Cincinnati Bar Association Executive Director John Norwine and Eric Combs, a partner at Dinsmore & Scholl and current president of the Cincinnati Bar Association.